Okay, good morning. Today's daf is daf Kuf Dalet. We're going to pick up on Kuf Gimel Mabez. Today's daf has been sponsored by the Levitan family. Thank you very much, Greg. And it's Chusser Fuhr Shlema for Sarah Gittel Bas Rivka. And our Talmud Torah should help bring that about. Okay, so we're picking up at the Mishnah at the bottom of Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. Hamakabel Sadame Chavero. So let's just take a moment. We had a similar start. We had a similar start to the first mission of the Perek, and today it's I referenced it briefly yesterday, but it's more relevant today to understand the difference between Arisos and Chachiros. So Arisos is what we call sharecropping. Chachiros, or someone is a chocher, is a slightly different arrangement where it's similar in the sense that the farmer is working the field that belongs to someone else, but as opposed to a sharecropping arrangement where you give some designated percentage, 30%, 40%, 50%, whatever it is, in the case of chachiros, what you're doing is you're saying that you're going to give, Rashi typically says, a certain number of kor, a certain amount of produce. The major difference that comes about, aside from a different method of calculation, is that in a sharecropping arrangement, if you have a bad crop, so the owner gets his percentage of a small crop. In a chachiros arrangement, it's a set number. So therefore, if he says, I'm going to give 20 kor, and the field only produces 15 kor, he has to go out and buy another 5 kor somewhere else. Conversely, if there's a bumper crop, he gets the benefit of it. So at the beginning, people get a choice to choose between that. Generally speaking, a chachiros is basically what we think of as a rental. It just happens to be, it's distinct from schiros, from a socher, just in the sense that he pays with crops as opposed to with dollars. So that's going to be relevant as we go through. Okay, so the Mishnah, five lines up on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. Hamakabel Sada Mechavero, if someone takes a field from his friend under one of these arrangements, we'll see that this Mishnah applies to both Chachiros and Arisos. It says, V'hi Beis Hashlachin, and it is a field that needs to be irrigated. It's something that the rainfall in that area is not sufficient for growing the crops. But, as Rashi explains, it has an advantage in this particular case because it actually has a mayan, which is technically a spring, but we'll see in the Gemara, it really means a river or some flowing body of water. So it helps. It's a better field for the sharecropper because he doesn't have to drag the water. It has a water source right there in the field. Obesa ilan, or it is a field that has a tree in it. We learned this halacha yesterday when we were talking about if you rent a field, doesn't include, we talked about it as an apple tree. Let's say you have an apple tree in the grain field. Who gets to keep the apples? And we're going according to the assumption that the sharecropper and the owner would share the apples. So that, again, both of these are something that is good for the sharecropper, either that it has an irrigation source or that it has a supplemental source of income in the sense of growing fruits that he gets to keep. So they enter into this arrangement around such a field. And what happens? Yavesh HaMayon, the spring that feeds the creek or the stream or the river, dries up. V'niktzatz ha'ilan, and the tree gets cut down somehow. So now he loses those advantages. He loses the water source or he loses the tree with its fruits. Eina menakalom chachuro. He cannot reduce his rent. So, and a rent if it's a case of a chocher, or his percentage if it's a case of an aris, of a sharecropper. So even though he was counting on that income, if it's lost, it's lost. However, im omer lo chocher, a chachor li sada beis hashlachin, if what happened was the renter said to the owner, rent me this field that has this water source in it. Chachor li sada beis hashlachin zu, this one. Oh, sada beis ha'ilan zeh, or rent me this field that has the tree in it. So by referencing it, we're going to see it more detailed in the Gemara, but ostensibly by referencing it specifically when they enter into the arrangement, he's saying that he is particular about that, and that has something to do with the price that he agrees upon with the owner, relates to the fact that there's this water source of the tree. So in that case, yavash ha'mayim and niktzatz ha'ilan, if the water source gets dried up, or if the tree gets chopped down, menakalom chachuro, then in fact, in that case, you would deduct from the rent, because that was part of the assumption. And so when they chose 20 kor, or they chose a percentage to share, it assumed that there would be this factor present. So now the Gemara is going to try and figure out exactly what's the case here. Hey, chidami. Ilema de yavish nara rabba. If we're talking about a case that, let's say in a region, you had a major river and the river dried up. So the Gemara says, "Why am I in a in that case, why would he not reduce the rent? Namele, let him say to him that makas medina he, that it is a makas medina, which is something we'll learn about, God willing, tomorrow. Is the idea kind of in American law is called force majeure. If there's something it happens, an act of God or something that affects all kinds of people, a broad swath of people, in fact, the landowner bears the brunt of that, and he is allowed to reduce his rent. So if we're talking about a case where the major river in the area dried up, then it should be, it should in fact be able to reduce the rent. So why did the Mishnah say you can't reduce the rent? So Rav Papa says, the Yavish Nara Zuta. We're talking about where a small tributary of the main river dried up, and this tributary by and large served this person, maybe a couple of people, but it's not something that qualifies as a Makkah Medina, and because it's just a small river, and because they did not expressly stipulate that they were entering into the rental arrangement on the basis of this water source of the tree, the field owner can say to the sharecropper, the cholcher, you can bring the water with a pail. So I'm sorry that the river dried up, but you could go to the main, since the main river source didn't dry up, you could go there and drag the water, and then therefore there would not be any reduction in the rent. Okay, Amar Rav Papa said, Hani tarta masnisa kamaisa mishkachas lo ben b'chachrenusa ben b'kablenusa, mikan va'elach de'isa b'kablenusa lesa b'chachrenusa, de'isa b'chachrenusa lesa b'kablenusa. So he says as follows, Rav Papa says, the first two mishnayas in this perek apply whether it is chachiros or kablanos, whether we're talking about this arrangement where it's a rental and he gives a certain amount of crops, or whether it's a sharecropping arrangement. After that, mikan ve'elach, the remaining mishnayos that we're going to deal with in this perek, if it is a case of sharecropping, it is not a case of field rental, and if it's a case of field rental, it's not a case of sharecropping. So what are the first two mishnayos in the perek? So the first one we dealt with yesterday, which is talking about the idea that minhag ha-medina governs. So if you're talking about a place where they have the custom to cut the wheat, you can't uproot the wheat, or it can't require someone to, or vice versa. Tosis points out that the second part of the mission that talks about sharing the tevin and kash in the same proportion that you share the wheat, that part applies only to an aris, only to a sharecropper. But Tosis says the primary point of the mission, he says, ikar milsa is the beginning, that applies both to rental and to sharecropping, as well as our mission, and the mission that talks about if there was this express assumption that they're going to have it, so whether you would reduce the rent or you would reduce the sharecropping percentage. Everything else we're going to learn, and perhaps if we have time, as we go through each Mishnah, we'll see why it relates either to chachiros or to arisos, but not to both. Okay. So back to our Mishnah. Amar lo chachor li sada beis hashlachin zeh. So if the person says, so if they do explicitly say, rent me this field that has that water source, then you do deduct from the rent. Now the Gemara says, v'yamai, why do we assume that he can actually reduce the rent? Lemele shmo ba'alma amri l'cha. Let him just say that when I said this beis hashlachin, this field that has the water source, I was simply identifying it. So someone says, a guy comes to the owner and says, I want to rent from you a field with a water source. And he says, I'll rent you this field with this water source. Right? So the Gemara says, so we're assuming that therefore, because they expressly made it clear that that was a condition of the pricing, that therefore you can reduce the rent. Now the Gemara says, maybe when he said, here, this field that has a water source, he was just giving it a name. He was saying this field with a water source because he had to identify it somehow. But maybe he wasn't really intending to commit himself to that contingency. Because we say, Milo Tanya, we have several examples where we see such a concept. Because we learned in a braisa, ha'omer lechavero, someone says to his friend, beis kor afra ani mocher lecha, that if someone says, I'm going to sell you this beis kor of afra as dirt, but it's like kind of real estate people refer to land as dirt. So they basically said, I'll sell you this field that's the size of a beis kor, and a beis kor we know is 50 by 50 amos. So he said, I'm going to sell it to you. Even though the actual size of the field is half of that, is only a lesach, Hegiu, the sale still reaches him, it still goes through. Why? Shalom macherlo ela shma. So he says, when he said a base core field, he didn't mean literally that it's the size of a base core. He meant the field, I call it base core. And so then the Braisa qualifies that. Vuhu de misgre base core. That assumes that in fact people call it a base core field. Maybe because, the Mepharshim say either maybe it used to be a base core and some of it got washed out or it produces like a base core. But for whatever reason, people call it a base core. So then when he said to the renter, I'm going to rent you this field that's a base core, it doesn't have to be a base core, and the sale goes through, or the rental goes through, it's a sale. The sale goes through, even though it's only the size of a lesach, that's half. Karmani macherloch, he says, I'm going to sell you this, vineyard. Afal pishein bo gafanim, even though it doesn't actually have any grapes. So the guy makes up, I'm going to sell you this vineyard, and then they come in and he's like, where are the grapes? So we say, Higiyu, the sale still goes through, Shalom Machalo El Shema. He was just calling it a vineyard. Maybe it used to be a vineyard, maybe it's good for a vineyard, whatever it is. Vuhu de Miskri Karma. That's as long as people actually call it a vineyard. So in other words, you can't just say that you call something anything you want. Say, here's my 5 acres, and then it's really 2 acres, and say, too bad. It's if there's a basis that it could be the name he calls it. Pardes Ami Mocher Lecha. If he says, I'm going to sell you this orchard. Now, orchard in the word pardes, which we see from Sukkim, is really a reference to a orchard that grows rimonim, pomegranates. So it says, Afa Pisha Embo Rimonim, even though when the guy looks at the field, there are no actual rimonim, Higiyu, the sale still goes through. Shalom Machalo El Shema, because he was only calling it that. He's calling it a pardes, which means Ramonim, but he didn't literally mean that. Vuhu de Miskri Pardeso. That's as long as it's sometimes called a pardeso. So what do you see from this price? Alma Amrle Shema Ba'ama Amrlecha. That he can say to the buyer, I was just calling it a pardes, or calling it a base core, or calling it a kerem. So why not? Hachanami Neimale Shema Ba'ama Amrlech. So why not say in our case also that even though the guy said, I'm going to give you this field, and when they made up with each other, even though he made up and said, I'm going to give you this field that has this water source, or I'm going to give you this field that has this apple tree in it, maybe he was just saying that as an identifying factor, and he was not stipulating to the fact that that water source or tree needs to remain. So that's the Gemara's question. We're going to have 2 answers. Okay, Amr Shmuel. Shmuel says, Lo kasha, it's not a problem. Hada amrle machker lechoker, hada amrle choker lemachker. So it says as follows, that in the Braisa, when we say that he's just referring to it by name, and as he didn't mean it literally to be a stipulation, it's talking about a case where the landowner said to the guy, I'm going to sell you a base core field, or I'm going to sell you a kerem, or whatever it is. So in that case, it's just the seller saying it. The buyer can presumably check it out and see what the meaning is. So in that case, we don't consider, we just say he was identifying it by name. He wasn't stipulating to exactly what size it is or what's in it. But in our Mishnah, where it's the renter who said to the landowner, he said, I want a field that's a Beis HaShlachin, which is what you see in the Mishnah when it says, he says, Amar lo, he says to him, Chachor li sada beis hashlachin, rent me a field that has this irrigation source. So since the renter is asking for it, then we understand that he's being particular. So it says, Amar le machir lechoker, that when we're talking about the landowner saying it to the renter that this is a irrigated field, Shma Ba'ama, he's just identifying the field. He's not stipulating to, Shma Ba'ama Amar le, he's just identifying the field. He's not stipulating to a condition. Amar le choker le machir, but if the renter says to the owner that I want a field with a Beis HaShlachin and a Kepeda, then that represents not just a name in convention, but he's actually saying to the landowner, I want a field that has the water source, and therefore if the water source dries up, he is entitled to reduce the rent. Okay, so that is Shmuel's answer. Ravina has a different answer. Again, we're dealing with why the Braisa says it's Shma Ba'alma, there's just a name, and the Mishnah says that you can reduce the rent when they mention it. So Ravina says, Idivi idi damarle machir lechoker. So Ravina says either case could be where it is the landowner saying it to the renter. We'll discuss in a minute what exactly this means. But midikamar zeh mechlal the koi begavo askinam. Because if you look at our Mishnah, Ravina's answer is as follows. When you look at our Mishnah, it says, that chacharli sada beis hashlachin zu, rent me this irrigated field, o sada beis ha'ilan zeh, or this field that has a tree. So from the fact that he says this one, implies that they're actually standing in or right near the field. They're standing in the field. They said this field that we're standing in or this field that's right over there. So therefore, beis hashlachin lamalei lameimar. So if we're talking about where they were standing in the field, and this is a field that has an irrigation source, everyone sees that. So why do you have to mention specifically that it's an irrigation source? So therefore, the kamerle beis hashlachin kedekai mihashta. Why does he mention the irrigation source? Because he's saying that I'm going to rent you a field that has an irrigation source just as it does now. So you can't say, if they're standing in the field, you can't say that when he referenced the irrigation source, it was simply to identify the field because they're standing in it. And he said it's this field. So if he referenced the water source, it shows that that was intended to be a condition, and that's how Ravina answers. The Rishonim differ about whether Ravina accepts Shmuel's answer, in which case what would be happening is as follows, that Shmuel says the question is whether the renter referenced it or the landowner. And what Ravina would be coming to say would say, even if we're talking about a case where it's the landowner who referenced it and not the buyer, he says, I agree with you, Shmuel, that if the buyer asks, for sure it's a condition. But even when the seller offers, if it's standing in the field, then that's considered specific and you would have to do it. Others understand that Ravina is coming to say something different. Say, it doesn't matter who asks. That's irrelevant. And therefore he's just coming to say something the opposite of what the way it was understood. So he says, even if we're talking about a case, even though our Mishnah is dealing with a case where the renter asked, because that's the language of the Mishnah, he says, even if the renter wouldn't ask and it was the owner saying it, the critical thing is not who asks, but whether you are actually standing in the field at that time, because then by the language of Zeh, you're saying it's this field, and therefore when you reference the Beis HaShlach and the water source, it must be a integral condition of the deal. Okay, Mishnah. Hamakabel sada mechavero vohovira. So someone is makabel sada from his friend, meaning he enters into this arrangement vohovira. We'll see in a second. Remember, every Mishnah now is either sharecropping or rental. We'll see what it is in a moment. Vohovira, and he leaves the field. He doesn't farm it. Shaman also kamaroi lasos. We figure out how much would this field have produced if he would have done it. Vinosin lo, we give it to him. And we give it to the owner. Shekach kosov lo, because that's what they used to write in the shtar when they entered into this arrangement. Im ovir, if I leave it alone and I don't velo avid and I don't work the field, ashalim b'metva, then I'll pay you b'metva. B'metva either means the goodness of the field, meaning whatever the field would have produced, or possibly the way we typically think of metav, like we say in damages, metav sadeh, metav kamo yishalim, that you would pay from the best fields. But whatever the point is, the idea is that if he leaves it fallow, then he has to pay the owner because of what's written in the shtar. Now, is this talking about chachiras or arisos? It's obviously talking about arisos, sharecropping. Why? Because in a chachiras scenario, someone says, I'm going to give you 20 kor. If they choose not to plant the field, they still have to give 20 kor. So there's nothing to talk about. It's only in a case of sharecropping where the owner was expecting a certain percentage, and now the guy didn't plant the field, so he's getting nothing. So therefore, you have to pay him. Okay, so, and we'll note that it said here that it referenced exactly what was written in the contract. It's written in the contract, im ovir, if I leave it empty, velo avid, and I don't work it. Okay, so what do we see? What does the Gemara learn from that? Remeir har yedarish lashon hedyot. Remeir used to darshin lashon hedyot. What does that mean? Because we're going to have a bunch of cases of darshining lashon hedyot. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, darish lashon hedyot. He says, shehir gilu hedyotos lichtov, shalokit takanas chachamim. We're talking about things where people were accustomed to write certain things in a shtar, which was not a language that was developed by the Rabbanim, which was not developed by the Jewish legal system, but rather it was just what people used to do. Hayadoresh halashin lifso kadin achrov. They would actually darshan into this language and look at the language to understand what is the halacha in this place. So it's saying something more than just you honor what's in the contract. It's saying you actually determine or draw the halacha on the basis of what people used to write in their contracts. So how do we see that? Because the Sanya we learned in the Brisa, Remeir Amarim Ovir Velo Avid, the Brisa that tracks our Mishnah, if I leave it blank, if I leave it empty and I don't work it, Ashalim B'Meitavah, that I'll pay you with the Meitav. So what do you see? You see that Remeir, who is the, when we have a Stam Mishnah, is generally Remeir. So in our Mishnah, why did he say he has to pay him? Because what you typically write is him Ovir Velo Avid. So now, obviously, a contract is a contract. So the question is, the way some of the Rishonim understand the Ramban in particular says, im ovir, is saying that would say that if I leave it fallow, then when you leave a field and you don't farm it for a year, you actually harm the field. So I know I would have to pay that. How do I know that I have to pay him for the lost profits he would have had? Is because they chose to write in the contract, im ovir velo avid, if I leave it empty and I don't work it. Why wouldn't, if he had just, it could have just said, if I'm going to work it, if I'm going to leave it empty, then I owe you money. So then you would say, what does he owe in that case? He owes the damage he caused to the field. The fact that in the contract, the Lashon B'nei Adam, in the Lashon Hedyotos, they said that, and I don't work the field, shows that he's also assuming responsibility for the fact that he should have worked the field, and if he didn't work the field, therefore we're going to charge him for that. Okay? We're now going to bring a number of examples where people darshan these things. Rabbi Yehuda, how you darsh Lashon Hedyot? Rabbi Yehuda also used to darshan from the language of common people and what they put in their contracts. The Sanya, Rabbi Yehuda learned, the Sanya we learned in the Brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Rabbi Yehuda says, Adam mevi karban asher al ishto, that a person has to bring a karban asher for his wife. What is this talking about? We know that there are certain karbanas that are karban ola v'yored, that it depends on the financial status of the person who's bringing it. So now, we say that a person has to bring the karbanas for his wife. Now let's say he's a well-to-do person. If he's poor, obviously he could bring the poor man's carbon. But if he's a wealthy guy, and what does he do? He says, I'm wealthy. My wife, she doesn't have any assets. So therefore she's poor. So I'm going to bring on her behalf a poor person's carbon. So we say it doesn't work like that. It goes by his financial status when he's assuming it. The chen called carbon, the carbon shehi chayav is any carbon that she is chayav. Why? Now, we're going to read a language that is the way some Rishonim have the Gemara, the way it's written by off. Us shekach kosov lach, because that's what he writes to her in the ksuba, achrayest islach alai min kadam dina, that these are the responsibilities that I'm taking upon myself even from before. So you see from the language in the ksuba, he takes on that added responsibility, and we darshan that he's in fact responsible, and then he has to pay by his status. Rashi, if you see, has a totally different language where Rashi says, lefikach im patra einu chayav behen, that he's talking about that when a husband divorces his wife, even though he incurred an obligation to bring a carbon on her behalf, einu chayav behen, he's not chayav to bring the carbon. So you would think once he became achray to bring a carbon for his wife, he has to do that. But why is he not chayev? Shekein hi koseves lo achrayin de'isili alach min kadam dana. That when she writes him a receipt for having received the ksuba, she writes, I release you from anything you owe for me. So therefore, even though the husband became obligated to bring a carbon for his wife, the fact that she chose to write in the shtar, I release you from responsibilities, even though we're talking about a carbon here, he's released from the carbon. So you see that we darshan lashon hedyot. Hillel Azakin darish lashon hedyot. Hillel Azakin also used to darshan lashon hedyot. Why? The sanya, because we learned in a brisa as follows: Anshe Alexandria hayimakashinish nishoyseyan v'shas kinisasun lechupa bay machir mechot v'nosom mehen. So he said, what used to happen? That in Alexandria, people would be mekadesh their wife, and obviously we know kiddushin is the first stage, is erusin, another word for kiddushin is erusin, and subsequently there's nesuin, there's some period of time between them. And what would happen is that in this place, people would have erusin or kiddushin with their wife, and then before or when they were going into the chuppah, others would come, and I saw, they say it was Goyim, it wasn't Jews, but it would come, although I don't know actually, because there's some implications between that it's Jewish, but some other people would come. The Chotvon also would grab these women, from them. Right? So that used to happen. Now, if a woman has Erisin, she's already bound to her husband. If she has relations with another person, then she's over on the Isser, and if there are children born from it, it would be a case of a Mamzerim. So the question here is as follows. So you had these women who had Kedushin, and then this band of men came along and grabbed them and took them away. So what happened? So then they had children from these men who took them away. So Chazal, the Chachamim wanted to make them, mamzerim. Amar lahem hilo azaken, hilo azaken said to these children, bring me the ksuba of your mother, meaning the ksuba from the first time, because Rashi says they used to write the ksuba at the, at the time they did Erisin, Hevilo Ksuba Ziman, they brought him the Ksuba, Umatza Shekasuba, Hila Zakin found that it was written in the Ksuba, Lichekinasi Lechupa, Havilila Intu. That he says that when I take you into the chuppah, you're going to be to me a wife. Now, the Rishonim explained that it's obvious. Of course, she's not his wife, fully his wife until he comes into chuppah. So why did he need to say it? So the Hillel Azakin said the reason they said that must be because they were implying a tanai. They were implying a condition, which is to say that if, not just when you take me to chuppah, then I'll be fully your wife. But it's saying, if you take me to chuppah, I'll be your wife. If you don't take me to chuppah, then retroactively, if someone else takes her, retroactively that kedushin is batal, because the kedushin was dependent on ultimately consummating it by chuppah, which presumably they did, because they knew that there was this habit where people would come and take the women. So Hillel looked at the language that they used to use in Alexandria. It wasn't something that was established by the Chachamim per se. L'asu b'nei mamzerim. And on that basis, the Chachamim said, okay, we'll step back and we're not going to make the children mamzerim, because they looked at the language that regular hedyotos had written, not something that was a lashon Chachamim. Rabbi Shubim Karcha Yadarish Lashon Hedyot. Rabbi Shubim Karcha also darshin lashon Hedyot, something that was written in the contract. The Sanya Rabbi Shubim Karcha, and Rabbi Shubim Karcha says, Hamave Eschavero, Loyim Shechenenu Yoser Michovo, that someone who lent to his friend, he should not take a security more than the value of the loan. I'm going to explain this in a minute. Shechach Kosovlo, because that's what they used to write in this document. And again, I'll explain in a moment. Tashlumta de Islach Alai Kol Kibol Dichi. That the payment that is to you upon me is going to be equivalent to this. Okay, so what are we talking about here? So, if someone lends money to their friend, they have a right to go at a certain point, if they haven't been paid, to go to Beis Din and get Beis Din to say, I can take this item of security, from the person. And what happens though, if it's the type of item that he needs every night, like clothing he needs or, implements he needs or whatever it is that he needs, then every day or night you have to go and give it back to him, right? The way we're understanding this initially is as follows, that whenever you give it back, in other words, you lose the benefit of having held it. What's the benefit of holding it the way we're understanding right now? The benefit of holding it is we know that if a person dies and he has a debt to someone that's not secured by land, you cannot collect it from the Yisomim. In this case, he has a debt. It's not secured by land. But Kolzman, he has an item in his hand, in his possession, then he's able to take that even if the guy dies. Even though the debt is secured by Metaltalin, since he's in possession of it, he can have it. Okay, so therefore what we're understanding is as follows, that what happens, he now wants to give it back. Mostly it seems he's giving it back for a longer period than the one day that the Torah requires. So he enters into a contract with the person that says, you know, that you assume full responsibility for the value of this mashkon, which value is equivalent to the debt that I owe you. And because he has this contract, the way we're understanding it right now, because he has this contract, that's equivalent of as if he was still holding the item. And therefore, it's a secure debt, even though it's secured by metaltalin. And normally, metaltalin is not a security. And if the guy dies, his heirs don't need to pay it. In this case, they would need to pay it. That's how we're understanding it now. So that's the halacha. Let's just take a moment to understand what we're trying to prove about Lashon Hedyot, and then we're going to examine that halacha a little more. From Lashon Hedyot, what they were trying to prove is that since they write, that they used to write in the contract that I owe you what this mashkon is worth, then you should make sure not to take a mashkon that is worth more than the debt, because what's going to happen? They're going to look at the contract. The contract's going to say the mashkon and the debt are equal to one another. Then, if the mashkon is worth more than the debt, you're going to end up taking the mashkon or its value, and you're going to therefore be stealing from the borrower because you're taking more than the debt. So therefore, you're saying when it's written in the contract that it's equal, you should make sure, therefore, to take an item that is in fact equal. Okay, but that's what we see about Darshan Lashon Hedyot. But now we're going to examine this assumption that the reason he takes it is so that it continues to be a secure debt, even though he's given the item back to the borrower. So the Gemara says, "Time of the Kasav Lehachi is the reason that he can collect from it as a secure debt because he wrote this language in there and gave the shtar." Ha'ilo Kasav Lehachi lo kanya. But you're saying that if he would not write this, this would not be a case where he could take possession of the item even after the person dies and his heirs are holding it. But that's not true. V'hamar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan said, "Mashkino." That if he goes to Beis Din and gets the entitlement to have a mashkin, the heshev lo mashkin, and then in accordance with the Torah, or perhaps for longer than that, he returns the mashkin, umeis, and then the borrower dies while he's holding on to the mashkin that is technically his, but was being held by the lender, shomto me'agabe banav, then you can still take it from his sons and you can collect from metaltalin. So what you were telling me the reason that he did the shtar is because if he's in possession of the item, he could collect from it. If he gives it back without the shtar, he can no longer collect from it because it's metaltalin. Therefore, he writes the shtar so that he can continue to collect. But the Gemara asks, but it's not true, because we see that even if you don't write the shtar, you can go and collect. Unto Amid Beis, Kaftal Amid Beis. So the Gemara says, Ahani Ksiva Legiraon, that why did they write the contract was not so that you should continue to be able to collect from Metaltalin, because we just saw from a Brisa that you can always do that, whether you write the contract or not. But the reason they used to write it is because what they would do is they would basically say the debt is equal to the value of the mashkon right now. What was the accomplishment of that? Because if we think about it as follows, the mashkon is, at the time that, if I'm the lender, I collect the mashkon from Beis Din, at that point, remember, someone who collects a mashkon is now responsible for anything that happens to that mashkon, including ones or whatever, as someone who's holding it, right? So now, this is kind of interesting. So at this point, I'm now the holder of the item, and I'm responsible for any loss that happens. Now what happens? I give it to the borrower because I'm obligated to give it back to him, right? And now a loss happens on his watch. But since I'm the holder of the mashkon, and he's only holding it from me, because I gave it to him as his entitlement to get the mashkon back, therefore, if there would be a loss in the value of the mashkon, even when the borrower himself is holding it, it would come off of my thing because I'm responsible for loss, right? So therefore, the reason they would write the shtar was not so they could collect from metaltalin, but rather they set the value of the debt at the value of the mashkon right now, and essentially it's a way of saying that he's not responsible for depreciation and value of the mashkon while the borrower himself is holding it. So that now becomes what the point of the shtar was. But the broader point that we rely on Lashon Hedyot is the idea that we will not let him, or we should not give him a mashkon that's worth more than the debt, since people had this lashon that they used to use that said it would be equivalent. So again, you see the idea that language chosen by Hedyotos, by regular people, dictates the halacha at some level. Okay. Rabbi Yossi hayadarish lashon hedyot. Rabbi Yossi also used to darshan lashon hedyot. The sanya, because we learned in a brisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi says, "Malkam shenagu lasos ksuba milva, gova milva." Okay. So what is this talking about? So we can't get away from nichtet on barzel. So we know that there's two different ways that if a husband takes assets of his wife when they enter into the marriage, that she can get it out at the end. One is nechzei tzon barzel, where essentially what you say is you set the value of her assets right now, and then therefore the husband is obligated to pay that value at the end, no matter whether the value of the assets have gone up or down, he owes that value. Versus nechzei tzon milug, nechzei milug are the case where the wife remains in possession of them, and the husband has the right to use the peros, but when he dies or they get divorced, the wife retains possession and has rights to the peros. So now, what we're talking about is in a place that they make the ksuba a loan. Which is that? That's nechzei tzon barzel. Essentially, what I'm saying is the ksuba, which is the dowry that's coming from the girl's father, is becoming a loan because the husband's saying, I'm getting it now, but I have to return it at the end. So what Rav Yossi was saying is in a place where they make the ksuba a loan, that gova milva, he has a right to collect it like a loan. What does that mean? That at the time of the marriage, because they write in the ksuba that I'm gonna give you your dowry at the end, right? And I'm committing myself to that loan. Therefore, the son-in-law, according to Rashi, has the ability to collect from the father-in-law at this time to say, well, if I'm committing to this dowry, you have to give me the dowry, and it becomes an obligation of him to give it at that point because of the language that's written there. The Rif understands that it's a relationship not between the son-in-law and father-in-law, but rather between the daughter and her father. But the basic gist is the same, is that you could force the father to give it like a loan because it was specified in the ksuba that you're treating it as next day tzon barzel, and the language in the ksuba makes it that it essentially obligates the father-in-law or father, as the case may be, to pay. Now, it continues. It says, lichbo, if the custom of that place was, what used to happen is, you know, a lot of things in that society seem to rely on pride, and they would say, like, it doesn't look good if the wife, we say she gets 200 zuz or whatever. So they would write 400 zuz. And everyone knew that you double in the ksuba. You write double because it makes it look better. But everyone knew in that place it was double. So therefore, when she comes to collect and she produces the ksuba that says 400, how much you give her? You give her 200 because everyone knows it was half. So lichbol, so if it was a kind of place where they would do this doubling, gova mechza. So then his ability to collect from his father-in-law at the beginning, he obviously can only collect half. He can't write in the ksuba 400 knowing that he's only going to have to pay 200 and then demand from the father-in-law 400. So we would say that he would only collect half. Narbloi, in this place, gavu tilsa, that they used to only, the woman would only collect a third. So therefore they would make it, let's say it was 200, they would write in the ksuba 600, but everyone knew you only paid 200. So therefore also with the father-in-law you'd only collect a third. Okay? So that was the custom there. Now, Mereimar magbi le shvacha. Mereimar went ahead and he collected the shvacha. What does that mean? So they were in such a place where they used to double it up. So it was really 200. They wrote 400. And then Mereimar let a guy go and collect from the father-in-law 400. So the question was, what's the deal? You know you're only going to pay at the end 200. So why are you letting him collect 400? Amale Ravina le Mereimar. Ravina said to Mereimar, the Hatanya, but we learned in this brisa that we just talked about, lichbol, if it's a place where they would double up the ksuba, go b'mechza, you can only collect half. So why did you let him collect 400? He should only be able to collect 200. So we say, lokasha hadekanimine hadelekanimine. We actually had this yesterday in a different context, but the idea that if you did a kinyan chalipin to secure the transaction, then, in fact, you have to do whatever's written in there, because we say the fact that they chose to enter into a kinyan chalipin means that they're literally committing to that, and it was in that case that he allowed the son-in-law to collect 400 from the father-in-law, even though he was only really going to pay 200, because they chose to do a kinyan chalipin to memorialize that. So you see, Ravina was the one who challenged Mereimar, but Ravina learned from this. So Ravina Mishabech v'kasav lebarte. Ravina Mishabech, he added, he exaggerated and he wrote to his daughter. So using our example, he wrote 400 even though the son-in-law was only going to give 200. And he was only going to give the son-in-law 200. And then this Chassan's family was very smart. Amrle, they said to him, Nikni minei demar. Oh, by the way, you made up. We're writing 400. Let's do kinyan chalipin. So what would have happened if he does kinyan chalipin? Then he would owe 400, but his daughter would only get 200 at the end. So what Ravina learned the lesson from this, and he said, Amrlu, he said, Imakna loimichbo. If you want me to do a kinyan chalipin, I'm happy to do it, but then I'm not doubling the amount. I'm going to write 200. Imichbal, if I'm going to double the amount and write 400, loimakni, I'm not going to do a kinyan chalipin, because he learned from Mereimar that if you do kinyan chalipin, you could end up obligating yourself for more than the daughter is going to get at the tail end. Okay, hahu gavra. So along the lines of talking about this custom, it gets very complicated when you say one thing and you do something else. So we're going to see that here. Ahu Gavra, there was this man, the Amar Lahu, and Rashi says that basically he was, it says, Mitzvah Machmas Misahaya. Now we're talking about a case where he was trying to clear up his affairs right before he died. And so he said to them, give my daughter 400 zuz in her ksuba. So Shalach Ravacha, Breda Rav Evia, Lekamid Ravashi. So obviously, if this is going to be honored, it's going to take away from the estate for the brothers or whatever. So they needed to figure out exactly what did he mean. So they sent to Ravacha, Breda Rav Evia, Ravacha, Breda Rav Evia sent to Ravashi, and it says, Arba Meya, the Inun Tamni Meya,
So what did the guy mean when he said, give my daughter 400 zuz? Did he mean write 400 but give her 200? Or did he mean write 800 so that she ends up with 400? What did the father mean when he said, I want you to make her ksuba 400? Is that the stated amount or is that the end amount? Which one, what did he mean? So Rashi said, Chazinan, let's see. E amar havula arba mea zuzi. That if he said, give her 400 zuz, the inon tamni mea. Then obviously, if he wanted her to get 400, how does he arrange for her to get 400? By saying 800. So that's how she got with 400. So that's if he said, give it to her. E amar, but if he said, ksuvula arba mea zuzi, that he said, write for her arba mea zuzi, so then, if you write, it's really only half, the inon masun. So then that by us, that's only 200. So in other words, then there would only be 200 coming out of his estate to go to the ksuba of his daughter. So that's Ravashi's way. He said, look at what was said. Ika the army. There are others who learn Ravashi differently. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Chazinan, check it out. I amar liksubasa arba mea zuza. If it says to her ksuba, right? Arba mea zuzi de imnan tamnan mea. He says, if you wrote for her ksuba 400 zuz, then that means you should write 800 so she'll get 400. E omer biksuba, so that you should write in her ksuba 400 zuz, arba mea zuzi, then the inon masa. Because if you're saying what you're writing in the thing, then that's really only 200. So Rav Ashi, in either way, was answering, the way we'll figure it out is we'll look at his language that he used to figure out, did he mean 800 or did he, 800 that's 400 or did he mean 400 that's 200. And the Gemara says, very nice distinctions Rav Ashi's making here, velohi, but it doesn't work that way. Loshna, the amr liksubasa, veloshna, the biksubasa, it doesn't matter whether he wrote liksubasa or biksubasa, and similarly, for that matter, it doesn't matter whether he said ksuvula or havula, it doesn't matter. That he says either way, it doesn't matter what he said. Basically, we assume that it's 400, that by us is 200. Ad amar havulu stama, unless he would just say, give her 400, not mentioning a ksuba at all, in that case, we would say that he literally meant 400. Okay. Hahu gavra, the kabal ara mechavre. There was this person who received, he entered into one of these arrangements with his friend to take the field. Amar imovrina la. So this is again the when we talk about leaving it blank or leaving a fallow that relates to arisus to sharecropping. So he entered into a sharecropping arrangement with the guy, and Amar imovrina la yohivna la alpha zuzi. He says, if I leave the field uncultivated, I'm going to give you 1,000 zuz. 1,000 zuz is a huge amount of money. Over Tilsa, and what happened? In the end, he left one-third of the field. He left it uncultivated, unfarmed. So Amri Nardai, they said, Dina Hudiyoiv le Tlas Meiv Tlas Meiv Tlas Meiv Tilsa. That you have to give 333 and a third. In other words, basically, you said that if you leave it blank, you're gonna give 1,000 zuz. If you left a third of it blank, you have to give a third of the value to the owner. That's what Nardai said. Rava Amar, Rava said, no, Asmachti, Vasmachta lo Kanya. So we've encountered this idea before, and Asmachta is if you say something, you put something out there, but you don't imagine that you're ever gonna be obligated to do it. This is the reason, for example, why we say gambling is not allowed, because it's stealing, because when someone gambles, they deep down think that they're gonna win, and if they lose, they didn't really want to give it up. So therefore, it's stealing when you take it. The idea of asmachta is, if someone doesn't really believe it's gonna happen to him, then he's not really fully committing to do it. So in this case, when he said, if I don't plant the field, it's not that he wanted to make a condition and give him 1,000 zuz. He was just so certain that he was going to plant the field. He said, if I don't plant it, I'll give you 1,000 zuz. But Rava says, that's an asmachta. Asmachta is lokanya because he never meant to pay it. So the Gemara asks, Rava mashnameh hadisnan, what does Rava do with our mission? It says, if I leave it fallow, lo avid, and I don't work it, ashlim b'meitva, then I'm gonna pay, with the meitav. So you see that he can commit to making a payment, if he doesn't do it. So why do you say he doesn't have to pay the third of 1,000? So the Gemara says, no, those aren't comparable. Hasam like a gazam.
in the case in our Mishnah, he wasn't saying some kind of exaggerated thing. He was entering into a realistic business term. He said, you're expecting a certain amount of money from me. Because you're expecting me to plant. If I don't end up planting, then you'll be able to collect from me. That's just a business contingency. Hacha, but in this case, kiven dekamar milsi yiserta, since he said something crazy, he said 1,000 zuz, guzma ba'amahu, it's just an exaggeration to kagazim, that he's exaggerating, and therefore, we would not make him pay anything at all, because there was no commitment. And so it's saying, tafasim rubalot tafasta, if you promise too much, it's gonna be perceived as a, asmachta. And if you make it a practical business term for the actual business loss that's going to be encountered, that's okay. Okay, third to last thin line. Ahu gavra dekibel ara l'shumshumi. So someone entered into one of these sharecropping arrangements, and he was supposed to plant sesame seeds. Now, sesame seeds are more valuable than wheat, but there is a downside to planting sesame, which is that the sesame draws more nutrients from the ground and therefore diminishes the value of the land more than if you planted wheat. Okay, so this guy entered into a sharecropping arrangement that he was going to plant sesame seeds, and sesame seeds are more valuable than wheat. Zarachiti changed his mind and he planted wheat, and avdachita kishumshimi. And what happened was, Rashi says, through some combination of price difference and the field yielded more, it ended up being that his wheat crop was worth more was worth equivalent to what the sesame crop would have done. So Sava Rav Kahana Lameimer Menakile Kach Shadara. So Rav Kahana thought as follows, that we should do what was going to happen. They had made up that they were going to do sesame, and let's say the sesame would be worth $1,000, and the owner would get a third, right? But in the process of doing that, his field would be reduced by, say, $33, just to make up a number, right? So what happened? So he would have ended up with $333 of sesame. Instead, he ended up with $333 of wheat, because the wheat ended up being worth the same as the shimshin. And now, Rav Kahana was thinking, maybe, since it was the aris who decided to switch to wheat, that the aris should be able to say to the owner, I didn't use that extra $33 that I would have diminished your field, and therefore I should only pay you 300 instead of a third. So that's what Rav Kahana thought to say. Rashi said to Rav Kahana, Amri inshi kachsha ara, Amri inshi, people say, kachsha ara v'loy lichash mara. Let the land be weakened and don't weaken the owner. Basically, Rashi points out as follows, says you can't do that because even though it's true that you did not diminish his field as much as he anticipated, at the end of the day, he entered into a deal where he was expecting $333. And just because you chose to make a thing, meanwhile, he budgeted his family budgets on the assumption that he was going to get $333. And that's what Rashi says. He's saying, I don't care if you're going to weaken my field. Weaken my field, just don't weaken me. He says, well, yichash mara, you shouldn't weaken the owner, lital achshav pachus, that he now has to take less, v'yira'ev hu beso, and he and his family will starve. In other words, he was relying on a certain amount of profit, and you can't change it just because you didn't diminish his field enough. He doesn't care about diminishing his field. Okay, another story, ahu gavra, there was this person in the Kabbalah Ara l'shumshumi, that he made up that he was going to take the field for sesame, and zarachiti, he planted wheat instead. And then what happened? Avdachiti tfeim in shumshumi. And it turned out that not only did the wheat produce value equivalent to the sesame, it actually produced more. So Sava Ravina Lameima, Ravina thought to say, Yoav le shivcha de beni beni, that we should let the sharecropper keep the added profits from the fact that he had done chitin more than shumshinin, because it was his choice. He did it, and therefore he should be able to keep it. And the owner would not get, let's say, a third. He'd get a third less the amount that was the increase for his having done chitin over shumshinin. Ravina atahu eshbach araloi ashbacha. They could say to him that what only you who chose to plant wheat, that was all you. It wasn't all you. It was also my field. My field produced this bumper crop, and that's why. So you can't tell me it's all you. It's not me. I should be able to keep it. Okay. Amri Nardai. In Nardai, they said, "Hi, Iska Palga Malva Upalga Pikadon. Okay, so we have to chazer a little bit from Ezau Neshach. So if we remember, Iska is an arrangement where basically you have one person who puts up the capital for the business and another person who runs it. So the cases Rashi deals with here, so we'll stick with Rashi, is that he has begadim, he has clothing, and basically the we're going to get into more detail as we go, but the owner, the guy gave a guy $100 worth of clothing, and he told him, you go to such and such city where it's worth more, and you'll sell it there, and we'll split the profits. That was their arrangement. So I put up all the clothing, you take the effort to go out there and sell it, right? So we said in Ezer Neshach, we talked about this in great detail, that we kind of divide it. Essentially, we say that half of it is deemed to be a loan to the guy who's going to go sell it, and half is a pekadon that I'm giving him my half. So basically, I'm taking the 100, and it's $100 worth of clothing. I'm saying $50 I'm lending you. $50 I'm giving you as a mashkon to go sell for me, right? So that is the arrangement they did. The Chazal said, we deem it as if it's split into a loan and split into a mashkon, right? So the Gemara says, Hayiska palgo malva palv kadan avid rabbanan milsa de nichale le love of a nichale le malva. They did something, Rabbanan here did something that was good for the love and good for the malva. Why was it good for each of them? Because essentially it reduced their risk. Because the owner knows that if let's say the guy was going off to a faraway city with the whole $100 worth of begadim, and robbers came and took it, right? So on the mashkon part, he's going to have lost it because it was his $50 of clothing and it's now gone. But the other $50 was a loan to the guy who was taking it there. So therefore, a loan. We know that a loan you have to pay even for an ones. So therefore, the guy's going to end up. Let's say I was the guy with $100 of clothing. I gave him 50 of mine. I lent him 50. That 50 that I lent him, he's still going to have to pay me back, even though it did it. And the other guy has the advantage that it's good for him as well. Why? Because when there's a loss, if there's a loss, that the loss essentially gets divided between them. Okay, so we say that this is a good arrangement, and so we say, v'nichalei l'malva, hasha damrinam palga malva, now that we're saying that half of it is a loan, iboy l'mishti be shichra shapir dami. In other words, once I say that I'm lending the guy half, he could do whatever he wants with it. He could take my clothes and sell them and buy beer. Right? Why? Because he owes me the 50. Now, if he takes his 50 and doesn't invest it, he's not going to be entitled to any of the profits of the investment. He's going to have to invest my 50 and give me all those profits. But essentially, because it's a loan, he can do whatever he wants with it. I'm not giving it to him as a pikadon, and therefore he can go buy beer with it. So Rava says, Lahachi karle iska, damle kiyahivna lach, leasuke be, velo lemishte be shechra. He says, no, you can't do that. When I give you this $100 in clothing, I'm very particular that I want you to take 50 of mine and sell it, and I want you to take 50 of yours and go sell it. Why am I particular? Because I want you to have skin in the game. If you're just going and selling my stuff, you're not going to work very hard to sell it. But if you're selling your own stuff too, and you're profiting from it, then you're going to work hard to sell it. So I'm makbid that you can't go buy beer with my half my clothing, because I lent it to you so that you could go alongside me in a business transaction, and we each have equal skin in the game, and you're motivated and incentivized to make more money. So Rava says you can't go buy beer. Okay, another thing, Amar Vidi Baravin, V'yemeis Nasim Metaltel Netzobanov. So he says, okay, here's another consequence of this. When I give him my $100 of clothing, $50 is a pikadon. That's mine. I'm gonna get it back if he dies. But $50 is a loan. And it's an unsecured loan. It's not secured by land. So if it's not secured by land, remember, we just talked about this before. If a guy dies, his yisomim cannot collect from metaltalin. So therefore, it's going to be lost. $50 the kids get, and I can't go collect it. So Rava says, not so fast. Doesn't work like that. Lahachi kar le iska. This is why they call it iska. that it doesn't become like metaltalin. Why? He says that's the nature. Iska means we're having a business arrangement. And the business arrangement, so Rashi explains as follows, that why is it that you can collect from Yesomim from property, land, but you cannot collect from metaltalin? The reason is as follows, because that when I enter into the loan, I know that the land is always going to be there and there's going to be a lien on the land, so I could always collect from it. But when I lend and it's just secured by metaltalin, I know going in that you could go spend those metaltalin. You're not restricted in any fashion, and I can't go pull it back from the buyer. So therefore, I don't rely on it when I make the loan. And if I don't rely on it, then at the end, when the kids get it, it's not their debt. And since I didn't rely on it, they don't have to pay it. Rava says Iska works differently, because Iska's like land. Because what? Because, as we just said, I'm makbid that you go and invest it right alongside my thing. So I know exactly where it's going to be. You're not allowed to take it and go buy beer. You have to invest it alongside my thing. So I know it's going to be there at the end. If my money is still in the investment, your money's going to be in the investment. So therefore, even though normally a loan is not secured by metaltalin, the reason is because you don't know where it's going to be. Maybe he'll have spent it. But here in this case, because he's not allowed to spend it, so I know exactly where it'll be, and therefore I'm able to collect metaltalin even from the kids. Okay, Amar Rava. I'll do the rabbi a favor, even though it's one line, it takes a couple minutes to explain. Tomorrow's a long daf, so I'll do it quickly. Amar Rava. Rava says, Chada iska v'trei shtari, pseida d'malva, trei iski v'chad shtara, pseida d'lova. He says, if you have one iska arrangement, and you do it in two shtaras, in two documents, that the lender loses. If you have two iskas, and you do it in one document, the borrower loses. What are we talking about here? Okay. So in order to understand this, we just have to chazer something else that we learned in Ezeu Neshach. That when you have Iska, so we talked about this. I give him $100 worth of clothes. Half is a pikadon, and half is a malva. Half is a deposit, and half is a loan. Right? Then what happens? Let's say it's Saeed who does this for me. So he goes off, and he invests both sides in a venture, and then comes the end, we split the profits. So what ends up happening? Let's say we had $100. He sells everything for $150. So there's $25 of profit to each of us, right? So he's getting $25 on the money he borrowed from me. He has to pay me back my $50, but he gets $25 on his own money. On my money, he's giving me $25 because that's what was earned. The question is, wait, why did he do it for me? Why did he earn me $25? Why did he sell my stuff? So if you're going to say, if he's not paid to sell my stuff, we're going to say the reason must be because I lent him the other 50. Because I lent him his 50, he's going to sell my 50. But that's a problem, because that's ribis. Because now we're saying that in exchange for my lending him $50, he's managing my other $50. So we have ribis. So how did they get past that issue? Is they used to, we learned many ways in Ezeu Neshach, but one of them was the idea that they would shift the percentage in a case of gain. So in a case of loss, it's 50-50. In a case of gain, in order that Saeed should be getting something for investing my money so that it's not ribis on my having lent them $50. So we switch the percentage to, let's say, 2/3, 1/3, right? So therefore, what happens? So now we're going to explain what Rava says. Rava says, if you have one ISCA arrangement, I have $100 worth of clothes, I give it to him. But for some reason, I make two shtaros. I make one for $50, his loan, one for $50, my mashkon, right? Or just break it into two. So what's going to happen? Let's say that, and these are the cases Rashi gives. Let's say one lot made $10, and one lot lost $5. Right. So the issue is as follows: if it was really $100 bundle of clothes I gave him, but we made it two shtaros for 50-50, so the one that lost 50 is because a loss we can split even Steven. So that's 50-50. So how much did I lose? $2.50, right? The one that gained 10, right? I can only, in other words, because that's a gain, I'm gonna get a 3 1/3 out of that 10. Because since it's a gain, I have to pay him for having done it, and the ratio switches to 1/3, 2/3. So therefore, I'm gonna get 3 1/3, so I'm gonna lose 2.5, I'm gonna get 3 1/3. So I'm gonna end up with the differential, that 3 1/3 is more than 2.5. But, if instead we make it one contract, so then $50 worth of clothing made $10. I'm sorry, I misstated the case Rashi says. So if he lost $5, it's split even Steven, it's 50-50, it's $2.50. It made $15 on the other end, In other words, if I get a third, I get $5. So, right? It's easier numbers than dealing with the $10. That's why Rashi did it. So, on the loss, I lost 2.5 because we split it 50-50. I lost $5. On the gain, it was a $15 gain. I get a third. So I get $5. So that's if we separate it into two separate contracts. I get $5 of profit. I get $2.50 of loss. What do I end up with? $2.50. Okay. Now, what happens though if we make it one contract? So now $50 loses $5. The other $50 makes $15. We now net them against each other because all in one contract. So what are we left with? We're left with $10 of gain. So how much do I get in that case? 3 1/3. So I went from, if we separated the contracts, I made it 2.5. If we put the contracts together, I get 3 1/3. So I'm better off that way. So in other words, if it was one deal, I should treat it as one deal, because if I treat it as two, I could lose. Conversely, if it was really two, so Rashi says that you did one today and one tomorrow, but then you choose to put it all in one contract, then the borrower is going to lose for the exact same reason. Because if you treated it as two separate things, I'd have gotten 2.5 of loss. I'm sorry, I'd have gotten 2.5 of loss and 10 of gain, because I get 2/3. So that'd be 7.5. But when I let you combine them, so then essentially what happens is I end up with the 2/3. So I get $6.66 instead of $7.50. So that's what Rav is saying. He says, because we split them this way, if you choose to take one iska and make it into two shtaros, the lender ends up losing if this scenario plays out. And conversely, if you take two different iskas and put it under one contract, the borrower ends up losing.